Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyar, America's right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, but hey, don't try to call in till later in the show. The phones are already lit up. Our phone number, we put a new number up on our website that we'll use this week. It's 303-463-1707. Hey, the Taliban government is now defunct. It's out of power. It no longer rules in Afghanistan or anywhere else. The Osama bin Laden, he successfully killed a few thousand Americans, which was a great tragedy, and destroyed seven buildings, but they lost a country. They lost a country, an army that was at their disposal, and a government. The Taliban government is defunct, and the war has been on for 2 months. I had a bet with one of the men in our church who said that this could take easily a year or two because of the terrain in Afghanistan, and these are hardened, experienced fighters, and the caves and the tunnels, and I said, no, you're underestimating our military superiority, our technological prowess that comes from our prosperity. And I said it would definitely not take as long as the Gulf War took. That was 100 days. So what's today? Today's the 10th, December 10th. We started October 7th. So we're just over 60 days into this. And last night at our Sunday night Bible study at our Denver Bible Church, I talked to the same guy, and I thought I'd make it easier on him because we have a bet going. We have a bet for a chocolate shake. This guy's first name is Larry. He really likes chocolate. So we have a bet for a chocolate shake. And I said, Larry, let's raise it to two chocolate shakes. And I'll modify the bet. And I'll bet you that the fighting in Afghanistan will be over within 7 days. One more week. And he said, what do you mean it'll be? I said, the fighting will be over. In another week, we won't be bombing them any longer. How many bombs have we dropped so far in Afghanistan? About 12,000, over 12,000 now, and about 60% of those were precision-guided weapons using satellites, GPS system, or laser beams, and 40% are dumb bombs. And of course, a few of the precision-guided weapons went off course, and tragically, apparently, one killed three of our special ops men and injured others. But it's been a good war so far, and the fall of the Taliban, what was so critical, why that had to happen, and we've been saying this from during the attack, while the last plane was still in the air, when we were on the air, we were saying that it was Osama bin Laden who did it, protected by the Taliban in Afghanistan. And that government needs to pay the price. They need to be destroyed so that other governments will be deterred. And that's what will happen. The fall of the Taliban is a deterrent to other governments who would otherwise support and harbor terrorists. So we're told, and I believe it, that 60 nations around the globe have Al-Qaeda terrorist cells. But when you cut off the head, you demoralize the body. You know, Al-Qaeda is Arabic for the base. That's what Al-Qaeda means, the base. And bin Laden has lost the base for his base because his base was Afghanistan. He said that was the safest country in the world for him. In fact, his oldest son was bragging in the media 2 months ago that his father was as safe as ever could be in Afghanistan and no one could ever hurt him there. Of course, we haven't touched his body yet, as far as we know. He could have been vaporized in some bomb, but we don't think so. But so the base for Al-Qaeda is now gone. So now even the name Al-Qaeda is baseless. There's no basis, in fact, even for their name. Not only was it always morally illegitimate, now, Al-Qaeda is not even linguistically legitimate. It no longer has a base. All right, I have an article here. Sent a clipping, a newspaper clipping. You hear that? That's to prove I have it here in my hands. And it's about a jury trial in Indiana for a porn shop, a pornography shop, and it was an obscenity trial. And this clipping is from November 29th out of the Herald Times. Now, where is the Herald Times? Well, that's a bit south of in Indiana. It's in Bloomington. Bloomington, Indiana. This is an Associated Press article. And the interesting thing about this story is that not only did one of our listeners send us the clipping of the story, but another listener emailed us and said, hey, I was on the jury in this particularly absurd case. And so anyway, we're going to talk about the case, and then after the break, we're going to go to the phones and speak to one of the jurors. All right, the headline in the story is jurors asked to view sex tapes, pornography videos. Now imagine this, you're the judge in an obscenity trial, and you tell the jurors that they're going to need to watch hour after hour of pornography in order to bring a verdict. Well, the article, this, I'm not even going to read the lead sentence because even the lead sentence is provocative. And of course, the media doesn't hesitate to be sexual or titillating. So I'm not going to read the lead, but the gist of it is that a courtroom with jurors and the judge and whoever else sat through hour after hour, in fact, 11 hours of pornography videos. Does that sound like justice? I'm asking my studio audience. What do you think, huh? St. Joseph's Circuit Court Judge Terry Crone. You know what? Denver Bible Church should send that judge a certificate. You know, we have certificates we send out for incompetent judges from Denver Bible Church. So we probably, well, we'll talk to the juror first. St. Joseph's Circuit Court Judge Terry Crone has said the videotapes must be viewed from opening to closing credits for jurors to decide whether the material meets the legal definition of obscenity. Now, how's that? So you have to, if there is a crime committed and you're going to try the accused, then you have to experience the crime. You have to recreate the crime and experience it. Otherwise, you just can't find justice.
Bob Enyard teaches the Bible like few others, and one of the best ways to introduce yourself to Bob Enyard's unique style of Bible teaching is with the video Mount Moriah. It's a 2-hour feature video that answers all kinds of questions about the resurrection. Is there evidence for the resurrection still in existence today? Well, this entertaining and professionally made video will show you evidence of Christ's resurrection that has remained for 2,000 years. It proves that 1,500 years after God carved the law in stone, He carved grace in stone at Mount Moriah, and you can answer those who ask, those who doubt the resurrection.
Most people choose their long-distance company right after they see one of their funny ads on TV. At Lifeline Communications, we think that you'll choose your long-distance company for an entirely different set of values. It's true that Lifeline's rates are now 12 to 27% lower than the competition, as low as 6.9 cents on weekdays and as low as 4.9 cents on Sunday. But we're the only major long-distance company which gives away 10% of its income to spread the gospel. And we're the only long-distance company recommended by thousands of major ministries all over America. Plus, if you switch right now, we'll give you 100 minutes of long distance free. So what do? If you're serious about saving money and promoting the kingdom of God, you can do both with Lifeline, long distance with a higher calling.
Give him a call, 1-800-684-2931. Bob's monthly Bible study. Join up, folks. Every Sunday night, we record a Bible study here in Denver, and we're going through the entire Bible. You can sign up for $24.95 a month. We send out 4 tapes a month every month. We distribute tapes right now to over 100 families around the country. Please join up. $24.95 a month. We can send them out automatically if you sign up by credit card. Give us a call, 1-888-836-9278. That's 1-888-8-NYARD.
So Judge Terry Crone told the jurors they'd have to view pornography videos from opening to closing credits so that the jurors could decide whether the material meets the legal definition of obscenity. Now we're going to go to the phones, and we're going to speak in northern Indiana to a gentleman named Craig. Welcome, Craig.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you for emailing us and letting us know about this case.
Hey, you're welcome.
In your email, you remember the gist of your email? I could read it unless you'd like to.
Well, I was just kind of wondering your take on the requirements that we as the jury were required, or what we were required to do.
Right. Well, why don't we, let's get to that. But first, let's start sort of backwards. Tell us what happened in the case. Was there a conviction?
Actually, the jury acquitted him. It was kind of an interesting situation coming into the, when we did the jury interview. I knew ahead of time that we'd have to view some of this stuff, but we were never told how much or to what extent. And the second day, they brought put the TV up to the VCR, and we were watching this video. And after about 15 minutes, I interrupted and I said, "Judge, we've seen enough. There's no reason for us to continue watching all this." And so he excused the rest of the jury and talked to me. He brought the other attorneys up and asked them, I don't know what he asked them, talked to them a little bit, and then he informed me. He says, "Well, as a juror, you must watch the entirety of the videos in order for to be part of the jury." And he says, "If you cannot do that, then you need to let us know." And
did they have an alternative jury?
Yeah, they had two other alternates.
All right.
And I said, "There's no way I can watch the entirety of this." Oh, before that, he also mentioned that there were three other videos, I believe. Two of them were four-hour videos, and one was a 1.5-hour.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have to watch all of those if they were admitted as evidence. And I just said, there's no way. There's no way I can sit and watch all of this. In my mind, it was like, you can see it. Why do you need to watch the whole thing? I mean, the scenes don't change that much.
Right.
And so I said, there's no way I can sit through this and maintain any kind of objectivity and any focus on what the law is. And he said, he was very gracious. He said, "Well, thank you for being part of this. I admire your forthrightness." And he excused me. So I left the jury then halfway. That was halfway on Tuesday, halfway through the day. And I guess they got done on a couple days later, and they acquitted him. I don't know how they quite acquitted him, but
of course,
acquitted him all counts.
Of course they acquitted him.
Yeah.
These cases almost always end in acquittals. And the judge's rule almost guaranteed an acquittal because they're trying him to find out if this meets the standard for obscenity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And any upstanding citizen in a community would refuse to view this.
Yeah,
and therefore, the jury selects itself people who are willing to acquit the porn shop owner.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know how they can actually say it's not obscene. I mean, if this isn't obscene, then what really is obscene?
Right. Nothing is obscene.
Yeah.
It's supposedly what the Supreme Court did to us, introducing this whole notion of not just pornographic, but is it obscene?
Mm-hmm.
So that if it violates the standards of the community, if
right.
the community is willing to accept it, then it's not obscene.
Yeah, I guess that's what the trial, excuse the trial was on.
Right. So we've been to the Colosseum in Rome, and back when they put 20,000 people in there and watch animals eat living human beings and kill them and
right.
eat them, well, it's not obscene if people will pay for it
exactly,
by that definition.
Yeah.
So anything, women could be raped, sex, bestiality, mm-hmm. Necrophilia, anything is acceptable
yeah.
as soon as the public accepts it. It's no longer could be prohibited because of our perverse understanding of free speech.
Mm-hmm. And the kind of the sad thing that I was kind of kept up with the newspaper articles, and I've talked to one reporter, and they kind of brought the same thing up, said, well, is this saying to the community, or does this have any implications on the First Amendment to say that people have the right to watch in their homes what they choose to? And I was kind of taken aback. I said, how can this have anything to do with the First Amendment? This has to do with what people are selling in your backyard. And I think there's three other pornography vendors in the area that our prosecuting attorney is taking to court based on this same statute of obscenity, I think.
Mm.
And if you go look where they're at, all of them are in the poorer sections of town.
Right.
Nobody wants to live next to these things.
Right. Crime rates go up, property rates go down. In Colorado, we put an extension in one of our interstates.
Mm-hmm.
We have I-70 out here, and C-470 goes around Denver on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were buying the land for the interchanges at C-470.
Okay.
And they had to buy it at Wadsworth and Kipling and Sheridan and Federal, these different local secondary roads.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got to Federal, which had porn shops right off the interchange,
mm-hmm.
they ended up with hundreds of thousands of dollars more that they didn't have to spend. They
huh.
budgeted for so much more because they didn't calculate in that the porn shops right at the interchange totally destroyed the property values.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? That argument, that's the argument that Christians use as activists to try to attack porn shops.
Mm-hmm.
Arguments like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big mistake.
Really?
Focus on the family, for example, and their efforts, and not only them, but people associated with them,
mm-hmm.
where they fight against obscenity and child pornography around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Their efforts are misguided in this sense. They refuse to say that pornography should be recriminalized,
mm-hmm.
that public sexuality should be criminal, sexually exploiting women should be criminal. So what they say, what Focus on the Family says, is they fight against child pornography and obscenity.
Right.
But they never, Craig, they never say that Playboy and Penthouse should be criminalized.
Right. Well, neither of these were just, I mean, this wasn't even like Playboy and Penthouse. This was, I mean, worse than that.
Yeah, of course.
And
right. But the point is, as soon as our country said it's legal to sexually exploit women
mm-hmm.
and sell pornography, but there's a standard of obscenity that's illegal,
mm-hmm.
as soon as we cross that first line, then forget it. Because what liberals do, liberals hate to be restrained.
Right.
They kick off all restraints.
Yeah.
So if God says have sex within marriage, they work to kick down that restraint.
Right, and it just keeps going further and further.
Right.
Back.
As soon as that's kicked down, then they're restrained by gender.
Mm-hmm.
Only have heterosexual fornication. And they say, who are you to tell me what to do? And they kick that down.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go for interspecial bestiality with animals. And then they go for children.
Right.
And just every vulgar, despicable thing conceivable, they do and they sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And our government is at fault. And I also give some blame to our Christian leaders who don't have the courage to say that public nudity should be criminal.
Yeah.
Do you know one who has that position that we should recriminalize pornography?
No, I don't know anybody that has that.
I've never heard one.
No, I haven't either.
I've heard them speak out against child pornography and against obscenity, but never against pornography.
Right.
Not as a crime, just as a sin.
Yeah, the thing I just can't understand is this. I mean, they gave us a definition of what obscenity is, and I don't understand how you can, I mean, how else, I mean, whoever made that law, how what is obscene if this is not obscene? I mean, where is there no line? I mean, I guess any further, it just becomes falls under other laws.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
The ACLU, they're the preeminent defender of free speech in America.
Mm-hmm.
What do they think? Do they think that, say, child pornography should be legal to sell?
Well, I've heard that they're in agreement with that's
right.
Freedom of speech, I guess.
Yeah, the ACLU supports the right to sell. And to distribute, to duplicate child pornography, sell it on the internet, on videotapes, and to make money from it. They support that right.
Yeah, that's just sick.
That's utterly sick. Because every time a video is reproduced and sold of someone using a child sexually, child becomes victimized all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Every copy that's sold, the child is victimized again.
Yeah.
And not only that, it turns adults, it whets their appetite for molesting children.
Yeah. And then that cycle just repeats. I worked with some abused kids for a while, and all of them had, I mean, you could tell, well, all of them had been abused, but they had also abused other people, too.
Right.
And that cycle just, I mean, where does it end? I mean, it never ends. If they continue, and then the kids, I mean, kids are abused, they don't get over that very quickly.
Right. And so if a group like the ACLU could be held in such high esteem in America, and they're as evil can be, defending the right to own, to sell, to distribute child pornography, that should be a capital crime.
Yeah.
That should be a capital crime.
Yeah, I agree.
Craig, thank you. I very much appreciate you letting us know about this.
Hey.
And our church, Denver Bible Church, we're going to send the judge a certificate.
Okay.
For judicial incompetence.
Well, I wonder whether that can be, I mean, is that the decision of the judge, or is that if the attorneys say, well, you only have to, if they agree on that, can that happen, or is that something that has to be enforced?
You have to view the whole video?
Right.
Well, the judge can do whatever he wants to do, but he's concerned about being overturned on appeal.
Right.
But here's my guess. There were women on the jury, right?
Right, yeah.
And women in the courtroom?
No, there was no women in the courtroom. There was, I think the women are outnumbered on the jury.
Okay. Here's my guess.
Yeah.
That the judge was sexually aroused by the thought of watching porn videos with other women in the room.
Well, he could have. They didn't have to watch it, but, I mean, it was simply the jury that had to look at the stuff. No one else in the courtroom could see it.
Who didn't have to watch it?
Nobody. I mean, none of the judge didn't. No, nobody else in the courtroom could see the video except for the jurors.
Hmm. All right.
And so, I mean, it's a pretty sad law, though, if they have to do that. I don't know how they're ever going to convict anybody.
Well, it's not a law. It's the judge's decision.
Really?
But basically what he's saying is if a crime is committed, the jury has to be able to experience the crime. Otherwise, they can't bring a verdict. We got to go. Thank you, Craig.
All lines are busy at this time. For updated information on Bob's national tour and ShadowGov demonstrations, press 1. For Bob's mailing address, press 2. And if you're an atheist, an anarchist, an evolutionist, a humanist, a communist, a socialist, a garden variety, sodomite, a Democrat, or a transgendered freak of nature, press 3. If you're ordering by credit card, please leave your name and phone number, and your call will be returned.
Yeah, you must be them and your people! Well, I'm not like any of those things that I just heard in that list of things he just said. I'm not an evolutionist or nothing like that. But I would just want to know if you're the guy I seen on Politically Incorrect, yeah, that's it. I just wanted to tell you that I think you guys rock. You guys are really cool, and you need to keep up the good work. So this is George from Jersey. Out.
Hi, I'm a garden variety sodomite and a transgendered freak of nature, and I'd really love a call back from Bob Inyart. So if you could give me a buzz, my name's Cody Lightholt. My phone number is 7. I'd really appreciate being straightened out because I'm sick of being a dirty fag. So thanks a bunch, Bobby. Talk to you later.
Hey, Mr. Inyart. I have actually viewed your website, and then I saw you on Politically Incorrect 3 times. And, well, I don't know what to say about you. All I can say is that I had an uncle that died of AIDS. I'm sure you refer to it as the gay plague. All I can say is that the majority of gays in this country are better people than you. Better than you or any other thing that you could ever be. I hate you, and I wish you had cancer.
I have never in my life heard such a hypocrite as this Bob Inyart. How in the world do you dare put him on the air? How can he judge anybody? He is terrible. You ought to be ashamed to even have him walking around.
Hey, Bob, I'm drunk. And guess what? God ain't gonna help me on this one. Take a guess of what I'm drinking. I'm drinking some vodka and some strawberry crush, buddy. Let me tell you what. I bet you're against n***** too, right? Yeah, n***** Let me tell you something. Oh, yeah, and juice, too. Guess what, Bob Inyart? I'll tell you something. Bob Inyart, guess what? I'm really seriously drunk, but anyhow. Check it out, though. So, I'm a garden variety sodomite. Bob Inyart. Check my
Bob. Welcome back, Bob Inyart Live. Welcome to our listeners in Rochester, New York on WRSB. And in northern Indiana, South Bend, the Notre Dame college football town at WHME, welcome. There's a story in Denver, actually a suburb of Denver, that many of you, obviously all of you out of state, would be unaware of this story. But a Westminster city councilwoman walked out of a council meeting recently when 7 Boy Scouts were participating in a flag opening ceremony, and the councilwoman walked out because the Boy Scouts, she calls a bigoted organization. The Boy Scouts. There's a war in our country against the Boy Scouts, and I'd like to talk right now to welcome to the show parents of one of the Boy Scouts. Is this Charlene?
Uh-huh.
Hi, Charlene. Welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
Hi, and I have my husband Dave on the line, too.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Okay.
Thank you both for joining us. Could you, I just gave a brief summary. Were you there when this happened?
Yes, we were.
Could you guys tell me and the audience what did happen?
Well, we need to make one thing clear, that we're just volunteered for the organization for the Boy Scouts of America. We're not paid employees. So.
Right, and you're not official spokesman for the organization.
Right.
But you did get their permission to come on the show, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, we did.
Okay, great.
They just wanted to make sure that we cleared that up right off the beginning.
Okay, sounds good. And you guys are parents, like millions of other parents out there who have kids in the Boy Scouts.
Right.
And you're concerned. So what happened?
Well, the boys were invited to the city council meeting to give the flag ceremony for the, you know, the opening ceremonies, and they do this, you know, in order to obtain their merit badges. And so that night we were there, the boys, you know, the council members all came into the chambers, and as soon as the Boy Scouts came into the room, the councilwoman in question got up and left the room. And when it was all over and done, she came back in and found it fitting to make a statement in front of everybody about her personal beliefs against the policy of the Boy Scouts and that she would not recognize the Boy Scouts of America nor participate in the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm. And
she said this in front of the kids?
Right.
Right.
Right. And I was, you know, as a parent and as a, you know, my husband's an assistant scoutmaster and I'm involved in the troop, it was very hurtful because the boys, you know, we're talking about 11, 12, 13-year-old boys that were there that night. They weren't even aware of what she was talking about, referring to.
Right, of
course.
They
were very hurt. It was embarrassing for all of us there. We were made to feel like we weren't, you know, welcome there. And it was, in my opinion, it was just an unnecessary, you know, series of comments that didn't need to be made.
Now, what we have noticed over the years is that there's an extreme form of intolerance that comes from those who claim to be against intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And a demand, those who claim to honor diversity demand that everyone march in lockstep with their culture and their morality.
Mm-hmm.
And so where's the diversity and where's the intolerance? Where's the respect of other views?
Well, that's exactly right. And, I mean, we have gotten a lot of support from community members. There was, you know, there was an article in the local newspaper about this, and we've had emails and we've had letters. And, you know, and it's, everybody's point is where does it stop? Mm. You know, if somebody of another racial, ethnic walks into the city council members, if you don't agree with their country's policies, do you get up and walk out?
Right.
And that's, you know, where does it end?
And this city councilwoman, she, and I've got here in front of me the Westminster Window. That's your local newspaper, right?
Right.
And she basically compared the Boy Scouts to Osama bin Laden.
She did.
She did. Not only is she wrong, she's insane.
Right.
Yep.
And she calls the Boy Scouts a bigoted organization.
Right.
And here we are supporting an organization that is bigoted. Bigotry perpetuates hate. When I grew up, we didn't have Boy Scouts locally that we were familiar with. We went to a private school, and it was just unfortunate. I would have loved to have been in the Boy Scouts.
Right.
We have kids in our church, Denver Bible Church. We've got kids in the Boy Scouts, and it's such a wonderful experience.
Right. And you know, what I took personal offense to was in her response to my emails. I came home that night from the meeting, and I was pretty upset as a parent. And I emailed the mayor, and I emailed all the council members. And her response to me was that as parents, knowing what the National Boy Scout policy is, we are raising our kids to be bigots because we allow them to be in the Boy Scouts.
Right.
And I take offense to that. You know, as parents,
of course,
we're trying to do everything we can to keep our kids in a somewhat sanely structured organization where they have outdoor activities, where there's some respect within the group, you know, and I take personal offense to the fact that I'm raising my child to be a bigot. I'm doing the best job that I know how in today's culture and society.
Let me ask you guys a couple questions as parents of a son. You have one son in the Boy Scouts?
Right.
Right.
And there were five scouts from one troop and two from another. Did all the kids know one another?
No.
No.
Okay. So this was a real Boy Scout event. Kids got together. It was an honor to be asked to do this.
Right.
And then they got treated like that.
Right.
Right.
Are you guys aware of the stories? They don't make page one, but of funding for Boy Scouts around the country has been severely curtailed.
Right.
In the last year due to the effort by homosexuals nationwide to vilify and undermine the Boy Scouts. You're familiar with that?
We've heard about it.
Yeah.
And in some cities, I saw a report out of New York City that the Boy Scouts in New York City, their funding has been cut by about 50%. And that, of course, would be devastating to any organization. Many schools, libraries, facilities have begun to challenge the Boy Scouts' right to use the facilities they've used for decades. And something I think tragic happened during this past presidential campaign. That was really at the height of the all-out assault on the Boy Scouts nationwide. And hardly anyone, certainly no one in any kind of high-profile political campaign, stood up for the Boy Scouts. No one said one word publicly to defend the Boy Scouts.
I think it's a very touchy issue, you know. And this to me is not a matter of do I believe in their policy? Do I, you know, I don't really want to debate their policy, but I just thought it was horrible the way it was handled in a city council chambers to verbalize a personal opinion in front of some boys that had no idea what she was talking about.
Right.
And, you know, this is something that it's the National Boy Scout policy, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. You know, all in all, the Boy Scouts are a good organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, it's one of the better things we have found to put our son in, and he loves it. I mean, if he didn't like it, he wouldn't be there. He's 14. He's one of the older ones. So if he didn't like it, he wouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. He lives for it.
Yeah.
So,
at what age do you enter into Eagle Scouts?
Well, you can be in. Well, you can answer that, Dave. Because
It's really not an age. You have to. Once you start the Boy Scouts, you have different ranks that you can achieve, and it usually takes 2 to 3 years. Just if you steady work on your merit badges and your rank advancement for Eagle. Our troop alone has 4 Eagles, and we have 2 more that are going up for their Eagle board. So. We're one of the fortunate troops that have quite a few Eagles.
Mm.
And most of them are serving the troop in a different capacity now instead of being there with the rest of the boys. I mean, they're like Jasmine, which is a junior assistant scoutmaster, and that's what most of our Eagle scouts are.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of assist the assistant scoutmasters and help us with teaching the younger boys merit badges and so forth.
Well, I want to thank you guys for being involved in your son's life. Of course, I'm a dad. We have 7 boys between us, my wife Cheryl and I. But so many families today, unfortunately, you've got parents who are not very involved with their kids' lives. There's a culture war going on in America, and it seems like that parents and traditional morality is on the losing end of a new sexual morality, and you're either going to walk in lockstep with that new sexual morality, or you are going to be ostracized and vilified.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So I think it's a scary world.
It is.
It is.
All right.
I mean, we've had to live, you know, through all the school, you know, the Columbines and everything else, and it's a whole different world out there. And we just believe that the scouting organization is just one of the better things to have him involved in, and, you know, it was an embarrassment for us, you know.
Sure. Well, Charlene and Dave, you guys, you weren't born yesterday. You might remember, I remember, I'm 42, that there were sexual morals in our country that I know from my study of history went back thousands of years, and now all that is thrown out, and what we used to call immorality is what goes. We'll be right back.
Can a Christian lie without sinning? If the Nazis were at your door, is it a sin to lie to them so they don't find the family of Jews living in your attic? Was it wrong for the Hebrew midwives to lie to save the Israelite babies in Exodus chapter 1? And if that was immoral, then why did God reward them? Are Christians today nicer than God? Would the average Christian condemn Jesus if he came back today and called people names like swine, Matthew 7, or a dog, Matthew 15, or a snake or a brood of vipers, Matthew 23? Today, that would be considered unchristlike by most Christians, but he said it. And in an effort to make you more Christ-like, we've put together a 6-tape audio album called Nicer Than God. It's available for $29.95. Get the information you won't receive in the average Nicer Than God church. The world we live in is an immoral, disgusting mess. The problems parents face in raising children today are enormous and growing. So to help you in your responsibility to raise godly young men and women, we at Bob Enyart Live are offering the Train Up a Child package. The first item is a 100-page book written by Michael and Debbie Pearl called To Train Up a Child. With over 300,000 copies in print, this is an invaluable resource for parents, based on biblical truth, not psychobabble. And always easy to understand and clear-thinking, Pastor Bob Enyart rounds out this teaching tool. Included in the package are two sermons on child-rearing, delivered by Pastor Enyart to his congregation in Denver, Colorado. Order the Train Up a Child package for $14.95 and get your child on the right path.
And we are back. Bob Enyart Live, 1-800-8-ENYART. But we've got, after Dave and Charlene, we've got another caller that came into us over the web, so it might take a while before we get to any actual callers. But Dave and Charlene,
yeah,
I'd like to just tell you a quick story. I've been a talk show host for about 10 years out of Denver, and at the height of our show, we were on in 80 cities 5 nights a week for some years, and now we're rebuilding on radio. And the very first program I ever did, this topic came up of the Boy Scouts and homosexuality, because they're just the very first show back in June of 1991. And it was on KLT radio in Denver, 800 AM. Mm-hmm. And there was a story in the paper about this issue. I forget exactly what it was. It might have been a scoutmaster who molested a child, something like that. It was my first day on the radio. I did the story. I talked about the concern of a homosexual scoutmaster, and I went back to work. I was the public relations manager for a manufacturing firm in Denver at the time called Sashko Sealants. They make caulking products. Mm-hmm. And I went in, and the purchasing manager comes up to me because he turned on the show. It was my first day on the radio, and during his lunch, he listened to the show, and he said, "Bob, I got to tell you, I've never told this to anyone, but 10 years ago, I was in the Boy Scouts. We had a homosexual Boy Scout master, and he attempted to molest me and two other kids on a camping trip." Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I dealt with that topic, and the first guy I see after I get off the air tells me that story, and in 10 years, I've heard that from dozens of people.
Right.
Dozens of people. Homosexuals don't become scoutmasters because they're not interested in boys.
Right.
That's not why they do it.
Right.
Exactly.
It's a real problem.
Well, and, you know, there is one thing I would like to say, Bob. You know, we've gotten a lot of response, and I did get a response from the city council members, and they were all embarrassed. They apologized on her behalf. The mayor apologized on her behalf. We've had some letters to the editor today in the local paper, and there was a lot of people that are just outraged that, you know, people are very opinionated about it.
Right.
But we have had a lot of positive, you know,
feedback
from the rest of the council members. So we do appreciate that.
Well, that's good to hear. If maybe you might not want to give it on the air, but if I can get your email off the air, I would like to send you an article.
Okay.
That deals with part of this subject.
Okay.
So can we do that?
That's fine.
I want to thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate you guys, your courage, and thanks for calling in. Okay, bye.
Okay.
All right. That was Dave and Charlene sticking up for their son, a Boy Scout in Westminster, Colorado, which is a suburb of Denver, just to the northwest of Denver. It's in the Denver metropolitan area. What a shame. All right, but no surprise. And what am I going to send to them? Well, we have an article called "Should Homosexuals Adopt?" Should homosexuals adopt? And my cousin, my first cousin, Michael Galluccio, adopted. He's a homosexual, and he and his partner in New Jersey adopted a baby, Adam, a son, and then they adopted a daughter, and now I think they've just adopted an older child. And it was against the law in New Jersey for homosexuals to adopt children. And my cousin worked to change that law and did so successfully. Of course, their governor, Christy Todd Whitman, was all encouraged and excited by the whole process. And she's also not only pro-abortion, but even pro-partial birth abortion. And she's the woman that George W. Bush just cannot say enough wonderful things about. Of course, the Bush administration, George W. Bush has recently appointed two open homosexuals to important government positions, one being our ambassador to Romania. Just did that a couple months ago. So so anyway, we'll send that article off, and I think it might really shock Dave and Charlene when they hear. Okay. Now, I got an email here. Boy, unfortunately, this show, we got a lot of strange stories. You know, I hate when so many of the stories deal with sexual immorality. But I got an article, not an email, an article, a clipping, an actual clipping. See, it's easy to send off an email to kgovlive@aol.com. It's more difficult to actually cut out a clipping from a newspaper and mail it to us. By the way, you can get our address, our mailing address, at kgov@aol.com. But, man, I've got some kind of instant messages here. Very interesting. But I'm going to hold off for a moment. We've got... Okay, our address, in case you can't get to the website, if you want to mail us something, P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado, 80001. Right? You can send it to Bob Enyart or to KGov, either way, at P.O. Box 583, Denver, Colorado, 80001. Now, so I get this a page out of the Hoosier Times, Sunday, December 2nd, and a man facing four felony charges for sexually molesting children. And it turns out that the guy that sent this to me is someone I know, because he and I in Bloomington, Indiana, were driving around with a police detective. And the police detective pointed out a homeless shelter at a church downtown Bloomington. Bloomington is a college town. IU is there. And he said, "You see that homeless shelter? That's a crime center. If you build it, they will come, criminals." And a lot of crime happens in Bloomington because this homeless shelter encourages criminals and people to stay homeless, to stay drug addicts, to stay alcoholics, not to get a job, don't get hungry. Like God says in the Bible, that if somebody will not work, they shall not eat. Don't feed them. It's a sin. Paul wrote that. It's a sin to feed somebody who's hungry if they're hungry because they're a wino or a drug addict and they will not win. Well, anyway, this article out of the Hoosier Times says that this 27-year-old guy who now is facing felony charges for sexually molesting children, how did they find him? How did they arrest him? A neighbor advised he was at a nearby shelter eating dinner. And the police went and took him into custody there, the Bloomington Police Department. And I'm thankful they did that. And too bad they don't listen to their cops and detectives there. The local church should close down that homeless shelter. They should close it down because institutionalized charity does more harm than it does good. Charity, caring for the needy, should be from one family to another, from my hand to your hand, not through an intermediary. All right, now, hey, our phone number, 303. Now you could try calling in. Because we dumped our other caller, right? Oh, we don't have time. Maybe real quick. 303-463-1707. If you call in real quickly, we might get you on, 303-463-1707. All right, now somebody sent us an article, actually a little blurb off of a website called Free Republic, and I guess it's a joke. It's the number one best-selling calendar, 2002 calendar among Palestinians, and it's a Hamas calendar. The calendar boys are suicide bombers for each month. Now, that can't be true, right? That just can't be true. All right. All right. Now, hey, I've got an instant message here from Judge CMP. That's his name. Judge CMP must be at AOL. And it says, should a statute of limitations apply to the crime of murder? Answer, no. It should not. That's the answer. If you find videotape evidence of someone who has murdered a woman, let's say, there's no reason in the world that he should not be convicted if he's still alive. Under no technicality should allow him to escape justice. All right, and here's another email, an instant message from Ben J235. Bob, a few weeks ago at the very end of the show, a caller asked your opinion on Harry Potter. You didn't have enough time to get into it, and you said you would on the next show, but I never heard you discuss it. You're right, Ben. I didn't get to it. Did I miss it? I'm interested in hearing what you think about it. Okay. Harry Potter. Harry Potter is obviously the stories about witchcraft. In some ways, C.S. Lewis's books are about witchcraft, his Chronicles of Narnia, and there's the White Witch. Isn't there a White Witch or something like that in there? And those are Christian allegory books, and they're brilliant. They've sold millions of copies, and they're great tools for teaching kids about God and the Bible. But of course, the Harry Potter books are not written by a Christian. They're written by a pagan. And Christians are afraid of their influence on kids, say, if the kids see the movie. But let me tell you this. The story is so otherworldly. It's so absurd. It's so wild that there's no sense of reality to it. It'd be like if your kids watch Star Wars, they're not going to go fight Darth Vader with a lightsaber. And if it was a dark story about true covens and witches in America and how they operate in their pagan religion, maybe it would be more seductive. But it's like a cartoon. It's an utterly fantastical, make-believe, absurd story where witches turn kids into newts and owls and whatever, and it's just make believe. So I think obviously it's not an edifying or helpful story in any way, but I don't think it's as destructive as Christian parents might think it would be, because it's just flat out silly make believe. Yes, some of the names and potions and spells or whatever are borrowed from real magic and witchcraft, but it's an absurd world. So anyway, I'm not really all that concerned about it. I'd rather it didn't exist. I'd rather the author repent, avoid hell, and become a Christian. But not all that worried about Harry Potter. I am worried about public schools and those who let their kids go to public schools. You realize your child will be seduced one way or another. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.